Rewinding Kaya FM on FM Rewind. Sidebar with Cindy.
On Kaya FM 95.9.
On Kaya FM 95.9, home of the Afropolitan. Welcome to Sidebar Cindy with me, Dr. Cindy Sewefansale. I'm in studio with DJ C Live this evening, and he's here to share insights about losing his loved one, grief, depression, and the new normal that he's had to embrace after the loss of his son.
Sidebar with Cindy on the home of the Afropolitan.
Kaya FM 95.9, home of the Afropolitan. Welcome to another week, week 12 actually, of Sidebar Cindy with me, Cindy Sewefansale. If you've missed any of our previous shows, you can log on to kayafm.co.za and listen to podcasts on FM Rewind. So this evening we're chatting to Clive Tshabalala, who's known as DJ C Live, and he's a hip-hop pioneer. He's in the hip-hop industry. And in 2015, he lost his son. So he's here to tell us that story. And we'll be taking your calls on 086-000-959. You can SMS us on 36959. The hashtags on social media are Sidebar Cindy and Kaya FM Talk. But before we go into that, before I start taking calls, I'd like to welcome Clive to Kaya FM.
Hello.
Welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. Hi to all the listeners at home.
So we'll just go into a bit of your background, Clive, yes. before we go into the story around Cocoa Dreams. So you were born and you grew up in Durban.
Yes, I grew up in Durban, and then 91 we moved to Jersey.
Okay, so why did you move to Jersey?
Work opportunities, I guess, you know. Yeah, I guess it was that.
Okay, yeah. And your life as a young boy, what is it like growing up in Natal?
It was strict. You
strict?
You. No, my dad was a very
he was an authoritarian
man. Yes. You know, he does everything by the book. You know, it didn't help that he worked as a man of the law. You know, it was a clerk of the court, so everything had to be done by the book.
Banshai.
Even the dishes, even the
Banshai
garden.
Banshai, and he says, when you're young, yeah?
Yes.
Really? So your dad believed in the rod?
I'm telling you, it was hard.
It was hard, and how many were you?
At first, there were three of us. Our eldest stepbrother, Sibonelo, who's passed on as well. But mostly it was myself and my brother.
Okay, and how? Yeah. And who's the eldest? Are you the
I am the eldest. My brother's 3 years younger than me.
So you're the firstborn.
Yeah, you know how that goes.
So you washed dishes, you did everything?
I did everything. You know, I did everything, took care of my niece. You know, I had to take my niece to hospital whenever she was sick, you know. Yeah, I had to do everything. I had to pave the way, basically, in the house.
And that's a lot of pressure. I think being a first, I'm an only child, so there wasn't much pressure on me. I was just perfect. I was the perfect child. But firstborns have a lot of pressure.
Look, I think what relieved my pressure, it could have been worse, was the fact that my aunt's daughter, Twain Yeslung,
your cousin.
My cousin.
Your first cousin.
My first cousin, who doubled up as a deputy parent. Now, she became deputy mom to us, because she was much older, you know. And also, I think the reason why I did not get as much pressure is because, being a guy, you know, you tend to get away with these things, you know, that women don't.
Yeah, that's true.
You know, I enjoyed the perks of
being the firstborn and being a son as well.
Yeah.
Okay, and your relationship with your parents, how was that?
With mom, it's great. With dad, of course, the authoritarian, it's on and off. You know, if you don't do things his way, it's the highway. You know, but as you grow, I think you tend to look past all the flaws, and you look for, you know, and choose what you love in a person, even though sometimes it's hard.
I think as you become, once you become a parent, you're able to look at your own shortcomings and then look at your parents, and I've said this before, and you're more forgiving of the mistakes that they make and they continue to make. You know, there's something about now being in those shoes where your child is judging you and also expecting perfection from you, and you think, wow, this is how I treated my mom or my dad, and you adjust yourself, you know.
Yeah.
And I think there's something also about our parents as they age. They become mellow and they forget stuff. right? They forget all the things they used to do before. I'm sure your dad has patchy memories about the stuff he used to do to you guys.
Look, I don't even think he wants to talk about it. I once raised it up and that did not go down well.
But that's a difference. I think that's a difference between our kids and how we are. I mean, you know, being a black kid is very interesting. I always say, I mean, my husband is white, so I always say to him that the way we speak to our parents is so different. Sure. To the say, no matter what, even if they're wrong, there's that thing, but actually, we shouldn't be like that.
You would never in a particular way, you know. But I think as a lot of new age parents do, you know, or the newer generation does, we tend to try and undo what we were taught by our parents, because you know, as time goes, we learn, we become better human beings.
That's true.
And we learn from our mistakes. You know, I'm still struggling with my little one. She's here in the studio. I still struggle with trying to be as liberal as I can.
Yeah, they have more rights than we did.
Yes. So, you know, she talks more than I did.
Yeah.
When I was young, and I really am for that. You know, I'm for the open lines of communication. You know, I'm just still trying to get used to it.
No,
it's
true. We're all struggling.
Yeah. Yesterday we got into a fight.
Yeah.
And, you know, she's looking at me. We got into a fight yesterday. I got really angry. She didn't want to do something. And she sat there and she said, no, I'm not going.
Oh, I'm so glad I'm not the only one.
Did I not lose my mind? But, you know, I looked at it in two ways again later. I'm like, okay. She's able to stand up and say no, okay. That's a good thing, you know. But she's saying no to the wrong person.
Well, if you've just joined us, you're listening to Kai FM 95.9. This is Sidebar Cindy with me, Cindy Siofansel. And I'm in studio with hip-hop artist C Live, also known as Clive Tshabalala. And we're speaking about his new song, Cocoa Dreams. And obviously, we'll get into the story behind the song, Cocoa Dreams, later on in the show. But right now, we're just getting into his life, his background, and the schools that you went to. Where did you go to school?
Whoa. We moved around a lot.
So how many schools did you go to?
Was it three or four? High schools, at least.
That's difficult.
Yeah, it was difficult. You know, I kind of made peace with the fact that I understand why I do not have long-term friendships, you know. In fact, a friend of mine said the other day, when I clive, you like pulling away. Yeah, I've noticed you, you know.
It's a defense mechanism.
That's exactly.
What's the point of getting too close to someone when you're going to be uprooted and moved to the next place?
That's exactly what I said to her. This was last week Saturday, you know, and I said it's a defense mechanism. It's definitely that, and it was a eureka moment, really, you know, because now I was like, oh my gosh, actually, you know, I've been called out. I never get called out because I duck just in time. Clive was here.
So you went to four different schools in a space of how long?
Oh. High school, I changed schools three times in high school. Yeah. It was three times. It was horrible. You know, it was horrible. But I mean, you can't, at a young age, it's hard to really collate all that information and make sense of it.
Mm-hmm.
It's just, it manifests itself in many ways, you know. It didn't help that the last area we moved to was a very quiet suburb. So, you know, going out was a bit tough. You go out, who are you going to play with? You know what I mean? It's like, okay, there's all these white kids. It's all nice and stuff, but where are my people?
We actually should have a show about that one day. The effects of, you know, moving the new era. South Africa got independent, and people then moved to Model C schools, and the impact that had on families. I think our parents meant well, right? They wanted us to get a better education, as it were. But how did it impact the kids? Because I don't think that the kids even had an opportunity to say yes or no. I don't want to be in this neighborhood with all these white kids. No one got a chance to not even got a chance to say, I don't want to do this.
Look, I'd happily be a guest again, you know, and my life was weird. You know, my surname is Smith as well. I've got, two surnames. So growing up, my dad wanted the best for us. But at the time, you know, there was a lot going on in the country.
Yeah.
You know, going Elokshini was just a no-no because schools were being burnt down. You know, so my dad figured, you know what, there is a multiracial school you guys can attend.
Yeah.
But the government of the day does not need to now. They didn't allow for black kids to go to multiracial schools. So the principal of the school, Floriton Primary in Richards Bay, the principal at the time was very sympathetic towards the black struggle, and he was like, listen, we can do this in a way in which the system does not need to know. So register your child under a Caucasian surname. Wow. You know, and I took on my aunt's name because she was married to a colored guy.
Okay, so you went in as Clive Smith, because of it.
It's been the bane of my existence ever since.
So even Ipaslako,
that's what it says. You know, that's what it says. It doesn't help that a trip to Home Affairs is a bit of a daunting exercise.
I can imagine.
And nobody really knows what's supposed to be done. So you'll be given many pieces of information, conflicting pieces of information. So it's been a bit of a daunting exercise.
And fitting into a multiracial school, how was that experience for you, Clive?
Oh, you know, being a kid, you know, I think there were feelings. I've never really gone down that that memory lane much, you know. But there are uneasy feelings, you know, knowing that I'm in an environment that is new to me. Mm. There's something in my memory that says it was uneasy. It was not okay, especially because now we go to school so far from home, you know, and it was just that one bus. I remember the one time I got locked in the toilets, and I got out and the bus was gone.
School is
empty. Bear in mind, this is a new area and it's being built up. So there's no neighbors for kilometers. It's no one, you know.
So how did you get home?
I hitchhiked. You know, I was a kid. I hitchhiked.
But I hope you didn't tell your dad.
Well, it was okay back then.
Okay.
It was okay back then. I mean, And I'm saying that very carefully. You know, it was okay hitchhiking. There wasn't none, you know, people didn't think that far, you know. Mm-hmm. I guess there weren't that many cases, or there were, I don't know. Mm-hmm. But, you know, black parents, you got to walk. You know, go play as far as you can outside the house. Go ride till you come back when the lights go down. You know, we didn't think of these things because our communities were never that far apart, and we knew each other, you know what I mean? But now, looking back, it's like, wow. My dad was irresponsible.
It's true. We used to play outside without any care because, you know, the threat of child trafficking and things like that wasn't a real... If it was, it wasn't as big as it is now.
Yeah. I mean, we used to sleep with our door open. It's Cohen, you know, which is where we lived for the longest time.
Hmm. Yeah. And then your foray into the entertainment industry was... You know, was music always in your heart? How did that start?
No. Look, we got to Joburg and... We were, because of where we were from KZN, firstly, you're umZulu and Josie, you're a joke, firstly.
Mm-hmm.
You know, secondly, you're snobbish. Okay, so you're not really black, are you? You're not really that all the way black. You're not from Elokshin, you don't understand this life. You know, being from KZN, being introduced to Soweto life was a whole different vibe.
I can imagine.
It was a whole different experience. It was... This is the fast life. We're like, wow. You know? And where was I going with this again?
It's the music.
Oh, entertainment industry. Yeah. Yes. So I discovered this place called Le Club, which was in town, where it was a melting pot of Jaws' hip hop.
Because how did you end up at Le Club?
It was on a trip to the library. You know? We all told our parents this. We went to the library in town. It was the big one in town. No, it started honestly.
Okay, so is there a library? Was there a library in town?
There was.
Okay.
And shame I went in, you know. So one day I was walking and I discovered this place and there was music playing and there was all these cool kids. I'm like, wow. You know, I really felt like that guy that just arrived in the bus from Jersey. I don't know. I was in high school though already. I think I was probably in grade 10.
Okay.
Yeah.
So in you go into Le Club.
Le Club. And you know, this is where the pro kids came from. This is where the squatter camps came from. Proverbs, you know, it was the melting pot of hip hop. And got into all the elements, the breakdancing, the graffiti.
So you can dance?
Yeah. I still do it.
You still dance?
I can still do it.
Oh, great.
Well, a mover too, you know. Age doesn't allow. Age doesn't allow.
No, we'll have to see some moves before you go.
No. Yeah, so I got into the culture and And I really excelled at what I did, you know, be it the breakdancing or the DJing, you know, which, I mean, as a group, we did many battles against the guys from Cape Town, you know. The rest of the group got to go to overseas as well to perform there.
And you say the group, who was in the group?
Oh, it was my younger brother, yeah. Clayton. DJ Switch was in there. A couple other guys as well, Versatile. Mm-hmm. You know, there was a few of us. And we did the most, for sure. We did the most. My brother's still overseas dancing as well. Yeah.
And was that a healing? Was it healing for you? Music heals.
It was an outlet.
Yes, okay. An outlet,
yeah,
for you too.
Yeah. It was an outlet. It was, you know, they say hip hop is the voice of the voiceless, you know. Mm-hmm. From the gassies to the hoods or whatnot to the favelas, hip hop is the vehicle, you know, because you're able to express ourselves, you know, in various ways. And it really spoke to us, you know. Hip hop speaks to kids; it does. And at the time, it was, yeah, it was my vehicle.
And how did you balance school and hip hop?
We didn't.
So did your grade? Your marks suffered.
Not really, because I was done with high school. You know, I was on my way out, and. And I went on to study sound engineering, you know. So it was right up there. It was okay, you know. So my marks didn't suffer at all.
Okay, and did your mom and dad understand what you were doing?
Mom supported us through and through, you know. Dad, I went again. He was like, what is this? Mm. You know, what is this nonsense that you guys are doing? I don't understand it. I don't care, you know. Mom was very supportive. Shame. I remember she took some of my dad's money. I don't know where it came from. She went and bought me turntables, you know.
Like, oh.
And she convinced dad to buy me proper turntables. These are like 18,000 rand, and he bought them, Shame. You know, so as much as he was not involved per se, you know, he was an old school type of dad. He knows how to take out his wallet and say, here, I'm being a father, you know. Anything other than that,
So would you advise your kids to follow in your footsteps?
Yes, I would.
You let your kids go into music?
Through and through. I would support anything my kids want to do.
Okay.
I will, you know, because I think I missed out on that support as a child, you know, and I still believe I would have gone further if the support was felt.
Okay,
even
you got
turntables,
but I mean, I'm looking for turntables, and the prices, because I'm learning how to DJ, and the prices are astronomical.
Yeah, they are.
So you got turntables. You mustn't complain, Clive. But I understand what you're saying. Yeah. I understand. Mm. And were you ever bullied at school?
No, I wasn't bullied. There was a bit of a stubborn, you know.
Okay.
Yeah, I learned quick to stand up for myself. I think I don't know doing what, because I never was a fighter either. But I think I just learned to gauge the vibe and learn how to maneuver around it. You know, maneuver around the cool kids as cool as I can be. You know,
and basically stay out of trouble
and avoid being bullied. You know, yeah.
And I know that you were awarded a certificate of appreciation by the Minister of Arts and Culture, Minister Natim Teto. What did that mean to you?
I shed a light here. You know, years of work without validation from the community of hip hop. You know, I think my contribution has been pretty immense. You know. A lot of work has been done, you know. It's all well and great to receive remuneration for any work that you do, but appreciation goes the extra mile, you know. It's like, thank you, we see you, you know. That really touched me, and a big shout out to Uvus Leo, you know, who was behind this event.
That's awesome. And as an adult, you're 38 years old now. When you look back in the last 10 years of your life, I mean, I know that the passing away of your son has changed you. But what else has changed you in the last 10 years?
My daughter.
Okay.
You know, the birth of my daughter, that really made me into somebody else. Mm. It really... it really made me into a much softer human being, you know, like a daughter's love, you know, a father's love for his daughter, you know, it really softens a man up, you know. There's the love we have for our sons, yes, but a daughter's love is different, you know. She's very demanding.
Aren't we all? They start young.
You know, that changed me. Mm-hmm. What else? You know, I think there's been a few other situations or life-changing. You know, like the loss of a job, you know, the loss of a job. And your life as you knew it before then,
that'll
definitely change you. You know, I remember when I stopped working at 5FM, you know, I thought life would go a certain way, but, you know, I did not know that, listen, after radio, it's a whole other monster, you know. But thank goodness, I don't really mind change that much, you know, because... I went from radio and got into the TV industry, television industry, and that was a daunting exercise that changed my personality as well. You know, suddenly I'm not in front of the camera. I'm not a celebrated guy. I'm now behind the scenes. Yeah. I now have to wear my big boy pants now, you know, and manage a group of people, you know. So that was also a bit of a change.
And if you've just joined us, I'm in studio with hip-hop DJ C-Live, and he lost his son, Nadif Kholeng, in a horror blaze 4 years ago. And he's been speaking about the tragedy recently, and this is the song he released this weekend, Coco Dreams. So, Clive, that's a beautiful song.
Thank
and
you.
And it's from your heart. You know, you listen to the lyrics, and it's straight from your heart.
Yeah.
How long did it take you to put the song together?
Just a point of correction. It features P.O. as well. Okay. He's the rapper on it.
Okay.
I'm not rapping on it.
Oh, okay. All right. Sorry.
What my job was here was to put together the best talent to tell my story, you know. So it had to be people that I resonated with on a molecular level, you know. I've got the biggest respect for P.O. Very diligent guy, compassionate guy as well, you know. He's a thespian of the arts, so he's very passionate about what he does, and I knew he was the perfect person to tell my story. T Phoenix I'd heard on another song, and I wanted so much to work with her, only to find out that we actually knew each other.
Okay.
And really was serendipity, and her name being Phoenix as well, being the bird that rises
from the ashes,
right? Well, because of that, it was like, okay, so there's something here. Well, let's use that, and, you know, divine intervention, let's do it.
And we have a beautiful song.
Yeah, the song has been ready for the past 3 months now.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we just looked for the right, I had to find the right time to release it and do justice by Nadif's legacy, Nadif's memory as well. It couldn't just be another release, you know. I wanted to be careful with how I handled this. I really wanted to take my time, you know, and I did.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I needed to be ready for this period. I needed to be ready for this conversation we're having today, you know. So the past few months have been really beautiful, you know. I stopped drinking, I stopped smoking. I needed to be clear of in thinking, clear of mind. I needed to be pure in intentions, pure spiritually, you know. I did a few things just to get my mind right for this time.
Mm.
Yeah.
And so the 27th of July 2015, you've written about it and you articulate what happened on that day, you know, everything that happened on that day so well. But I know that for the longest time, you know, you weren't speaking about any of this.
Yeah.
So the funeral happened, and then, you know, then you went quiet. And during that time, you were in therapy. Your
Correct.
Family was supporting you. What was the hardest part, Clive, after your son passed away?
It had to be my anxiety attacks. Because those are filled, they're so layered. You know, And I, you know, it was this new discovery for me. It was like, wow, what is this thing? What am I going through? What is happening to my body? Why do I feel like this is it? Why do I feel like I'm not going to make it past this, you know? How is an emotional thing, which was triggered, was started from a thought, how is it now manifesting as a physical, you know? That really beat me, and it's such a debilitating occurrence. Like, it's the scariest thing ever.
And you can't explain it to people. I think it's very difficult to explain an anxiety attack.
You can't. I mean, it'll have you rolling on the floor.
Mm.
It'll have you not wanting to do anything. Like, you're an emotional wreck. You know, I really believe an anxiety attack could kill you. Like, you know, that's how scary it is.
And so who did you reach out to when you realized that something was wrong and you needed help?
Look, already I had a psychologist that I was seeing, you know. And when this incident occurred, you know, she was able to, you know, lucky enough, she was able to speak to me on that level as well, you know, because I struggled finding support for bereaved parents, you know. There is an organization out there, but I really struggled to get through to them, to get any help from them, you know, and that hurt, you know, because I was met with, maybe she was just having a bad day, I don't know, you know, these things happen, you know, I remember that's the day I decided, you know what, I'm alone in this. I'm alone in this. There's no one else that's going to help me, because I had made a phone call and the reception was very cold. And that's when I realized, you know what? No help was coming. You know,
and you know, from the people around you, who was your pillar of support?
Look, there was a whole bunch of people, you know. I think the way I was raised and not being fully committing to friendships, you know, that almost diminishes your trust circle. It does, in fact. You know, I have none, you know. But I think through growth. And your mind and learning to work out with what it has, you know, I learned to take what I could from wherever I could, you know. Okay. I remember there was a time when a very good friend of mine called me and he said, "Clive, I love you." That was the thing I needed to hear. I did not know that. And it was brotherly love, you know. And being a man, you know, it's like, what is this I love you thing, you know? But that day, it hit me so deep. It was a wow moment as well for me.
And Nadif's mum, I know in the same year that he passed away, yeah.
She had passed away on in Feb, you know. So his life, Nadif's life, had been uprooted. My life had been uprooted, you know. We weren't together, by the way. So she was married, and, you know, so when that happened, it was a bittersweet moment, because I have always had the wish to live with my kids. You know, my family knows this. I always thought I had a bad run with relationships, you know. And I was like, you know what, Ma, I'm tired of dating. You know, I just want to live with my kids and be happy. You know, I think I'm going to be happy, you know. So it was a bittersweet moment. And Nadif came to live with me. And it was a moment I've been waiting for so long. You know, my firstborn son, you know, all that beautiful stuff, you know. And I was not equipped. Looking back now, I was not equipped to deal with a child who just lost his mom. I did not know what to do.
Well, grief in children is difficult, and I think identifying it is the challenge. That's because kids don't express their feelings like we do.
Yeah. You know, that's the part, you know, and I was not looking forward to that, you know, I was not looking forward to not understanding what was wrong with him.
Mm-hmm.
I was not looking forward to maybe him one day lashing out, you know, because he was such a good kid. You know, we had a great relationship. You know, we had a great relationship. He had a great relationship with my then partner. Mm-hmm. You know, they had a superb relationships. A relationship, and this Cocoa Dreams comes from something they used to say to each other, you know.
Yeah, the good night at Cocoa good Dreams, night.
Yeah. And I caught on to it so late, you know. I was like, what are you guys hiding from me? What is this Cocoa Dreams thing? And I was like, wow, it was watching him around his sisters was just so amazing, you know. And he became big brother, you know. It was sad as well because, you know, I realized because of the situation between his mom and his dad, he was now forced to be almost the man of the house, you know, which is what I've noticed with boys in such situations.
Yeah, they substitute themselves into, yeah.
Yes. You know, so it was a bittersweet moment watching him around, how he was around his sisters.
Yeah.
But you could see that he was not being a child himself. He almost has stepped back. He almost put aside his childhood and
grew up for them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, but he was a beautiful kid nonetheless. I had said this so many times that, you know what, I think he's a godsend. You know, I do not know what my role was here. I think my role was just to be a vehicle through which he was born. You know, that's the only reason why I'm here, you know, because mm-hmm. I do not see any resemblance to me here in terms of personality. Mm. You know, he seemed to have a much more spiritual calling, much more bigger calling than you know, I saw God at work when I watched him. I was like, wow, you know. So when the incident happened, it was... In my head, maybe because of the trauma, you know, my mind made it seem as though it was something more majestic happening. You know, I felt as though, even to this day, even now, I felt as though an angel had swooped him up.
And taken him.
And I tried to intervene and I got my hands smacked, both mm-hmm. my hands, you know, because when I ran into that room, the flames hit my face and my hands, and
you burnt, yeah.
Yeah, my hands were burnt. You know, as I said before, they melted right in front of me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, to a point where I couldn't do anything. I was rendered useless immediately. You know, which for me was a bit shocking because then I had I didn't have it. Third degree burns, so to speak, all over my body. No, it was just my hands. Hey, listen, it's a warning. Move away, you know, step away. You know, but I know that's trauma talking. It makes me make it okay, you know. Yeah, it you know, the epic part of the story, you know, firstly, was that very same Sunday, I had been overcome with so much emotion for some odd reason. You know, my friends always say, I'm always so close to my feelings.
Yeah.
You know, I'm in my feels, you know, which I've made peace with. You know, I was like, you know what?
Actually, that's just who you
are.
That's
who I am. Leave me alone.
That's
you know?
Just who you are.
But this time it was deeper. It was, there was a greater sense of urgency.
You know, that specific day. Okay, so hold that thought. And I'm chatting to C-Live, also known as Clive Tshabalala, and we're talking about the story of his son, Unatief Goleng, who passed away in 2015 on the 27th of July in a tragic fire at their home. And Clive is here sharing with us, you know, what he's gone through in the last 4 years. And also, you know, we played a song, Cocoa Dreams, earlier on, and he shared a very special story about that. You know, so as I was saying to you during the break, Clive, that, you know, parents shouldn't have to bury their kids.
Correct.
Yeah.
Correct. You know, there because of the way I am, I don't shy away from the hard topics, from the hard thoughts, you know, thoughts of losing a brother, thoughts of losing mom. I've entertained these thoughts because, you know, rather be prepared, you know. As much as death is hard to overcome, it's part of life. We are born on this earth knowing that we're going to die, so accept it sooner. And never did I ever think that I would lose a son. Never did I ever think that I would lose Nadif. Never did I ever think that my house, entire house would burn down and I would lose everything and the most precious thing in that house, you know. That really changed, it broke me down, you know. Firstly, my ego was set aside, you know. I got separated from my ego. You know, we went from Sea Live to Clive, yeah, to Zenzel Shabalala, you know, I was broken down to my basic being, you know, and that opened my eyes to a whole lot of a whole new life, a life filled with compassion, filled with love, you know, a life where we're just being, you know, you are true to yourself. Because you have to feel everything. That's all that's left.
Yeah,
you know, that's all that's left. And I was in disbelief. You know, I was in disbelief when this incident happened. You know, lucky enough, I was in the house
when it happened.
And it happened. You know, I never understood that. My dad always said, "You're lucky you were there." I was like, "What do you mean I'm lucky?" Like, there's nothing worse than being a parent and or losing a loved one and in a violent incident as well, and then constantly questioning how did it happen, you were not there, you know. If it wasn't for him, I would not be here today. I would have died in that fire as well, you know. His screams woke us up, you know. So for me, for the past 4 years, I've not known what to do, you know. I've not known what to do, and it's been okay, you know. I was totally okay with it. Lucky enough, I don't have pressures from home.
Yeah.
Hey, you need to do this. Hey, unveiling this, unveiling that. They really let me be with my grief. Let me be with how I want to do
things. And that's important, because we all grieve differently.
Yeah.
And there's no timeline. There's no specific way of grieving, but it's just, you just have to go through the motions.
Yeah.
And
you can't rush it. You can't do it in any other way. You know, to this day, I still say that's one of the most, I don't know if I consider myself lucky or, you know, there's a great deal of I feel special to have gone through something of this nature. I wouldn't wish it on my worst enemy, you know, but here we are.
You know, you're still alive. You're still standing.
I'm still alive. I'm still standing, you know. Apart from just being alive physically, you know, emotionally, I've managed to really surpass some really serious milestones, you know. I mean, there's a part where I was just so toxic, you know. But I mean, how could you not be?
Yeah. Well, we're taking calls on 086-000-959. You can SMS us on 36959. I'm still chatting to Clive Shabalala, DJ
Shabalala.
C Live. Shabalala, sorry. DJ C Live. And we're speaking about his new song, Cocoa Dreams, which is about his son, Nadif Kholeng, who passed away in a tragic fire in 2015 on the 27th of July. So if you're a parent and you're grieving, call us and you know, tell us, you know, what it's been like for you. I know that, you know, obviously your family rallied around you.
Correct.
But, you know, your psychologist played a big role in walking you through this.
Yeah.
Do you find that, you know, men generally don't know how to seek help when they're going through something like this?
Yeah. That's 100% true, you know. I think it's a bit of a... it's a well-known fact, you know, and it's worse when you are a Zulu man, you know, that comes from that background that says men indodakali, be a man, stand up, you know what I mean? Amandla ndoda, you know, all these nice phrases, you know, that we just throw out willy-nilly and not really considering what the impact will be, you know. There's a whole bunch of things I've had to unlearn, you know. When you talk about toxic masculinity, I'm currently in that process of unlearning so much of these bad things that we've learned, you know. Yeah. I'm learning to be vulnerable.
That's difficult.
That is so beautiful though when it happens, you know, because it attracts so much light, so much help. When you as a man can stand up and say, "Angikho right," like I'm not okay.
I need help.
Yeah. You know, it really, you know, in my relationships, I've always taken on the role of the alpha male. You know, I've got this, and, you know, aggression. You know, it's always been that. Kanti, that has never been the way to love.
Yeah.
You know, it's never been the way to love. I finally gave in. Like, you know what, I can't do this. Okay. I do not have my things in order.
Yeah, I need to sort myself out and we'll see.
Yeah, when I did that, yeah.
Okay, so let's hear what Ubuntle has to say. Ubuntle is calling us on 086-000-959. Good evening, Ubuntle, and welcome to the show.
Hi, Dr. Cindy. I actually think that Clive has just touched on the question that I wanted to ask. And I think, Clive, you are amazing. You're incredible. Your story is just so deep, so powerful, and it touches so many of us in so many ways. I think you're incredible. But I just want to know the notion of window out kindly. How do we dispel that myth, especially with young black men who are going through various things, you know, whether it's something traumatic as a loss of a child or a partner or something along those lines? How do you actually tell guys that, listen, it's okay. It's okay to not be okay.
Look, for me, it's the whole premise of what I'm doing, you know. I recognize that I have a greater responsibility to my neighbor than I previously cared to acknowledge, you know. There, as much as I might not think of myself as an influential person, there are 10 kids out there or 10 people out there that really buy into what I'm saying. You know, and I decided not to take that lightly. I decided, look, let me be vulnerable. What I've been doing for the past so many years is not working either. You know, so with this project, you know, I wanted it to be a springboard for further conversations with men, and I'm glad you raised up the issue of men, because even our suicide statistics speak a scary story. You know, the majority of suicides is men. You know, and I can only speak from the position that of my understanding, and as a male, I can only clearly and with conviction speak to other men, you know. And I think if we fix the black men in our society, you know, we've done a great deal of good.
Thank you so much, Buntle. We have Kahiso calling us from Katlehong. Kahiso, welcome to Sidebar with Cindy.
Welcome, Clive.
Hi.
Kahiso, the photographer. When I lost my partner recently, my dad said, "My man, where we come from, tigers have tasted men's tears. You gotta cry."
Wow. Wow.
That's it.
Wow. Condolences to you, brother.
Yeah.
Thank you very much. Sure. Wow, that's beautiful.
That's beautiful.
And that's how I want to raise my kids. That's exactly what I want to tell my kids. You know, I've often watched other friends of mine who've got great relationships with their dads, you know, because I think that that's where in most cases it begins, with the fathers, you know. And I envy that, you know. I'm like, yes, my dad has been there, you know. He's still with my mom, but sure, you know, there's a whole big chunk missing. You know, I wish I could have sat with my dad during this phase. I wish my dad was there for me, you know, through and through. And not to blame him or anything, you know. He was doing the best he knows, yeah. You know what I mean? He's doing it his way as well. And I think I'm here today because of what my dad had instilled in me, you know. You know what I mean? So that there is a great deal of gratitude as well, you know. But obviously, paying it forward, we got to do better.
And here you are, and you're sharing your story on the various platforms. It's going to change people's lives. It doesn't always feel like it. You know, when you share from your heart and you're vulnerable, it doesn't always feel as if you're making a difference. But you'll see as the months go by and the messages start streaming in and you start meeting people and they tell you how you've changed their lives, this will all make sense.
Can I just tell you, I was never ready for any of this. I do not know. I think once the decision was made, well, the decision was made long before I put it into action. It was like, okay, you know, you just keep procrastinating. You know what you have to do.
You have to talk about this.
You know what you have to do. So it's been 4 years of running away from it, ducking from it, you know.
And also adjusting. I mean, I always say, adjusting. You know, grief brings out the new normal, you know. So you'll never be the Clive Shabalala that you were before. There's a new Clive now, and that's okay. So the past 4 years have just been you fitting into this new Clive and adjusting so that, as you said, you can get to this day and be able to share your story so eloquently.
Correct. And I'm it's a good place to be in. Really, it is. Every time I speak about my trauma, my incident, it gets better.
Well, thank you so much for coming here, and I'm so glad to have spent the last hour with you, speaking about your life, you know, your past, and obviously, you know, the incident that happened with your son, Unatif Huleng. And I hope that you continue sharing your story and helping lots of men out there, especially black men, come to a place of vulnerability and seeking help and so on. So my closing statement is: grief is a last act of love we can give to those we loved. When there's deep grief, there was great love. So thank you so much, Clive. I look forward to sharing this podcast with everybody because you gave a lot of insights, and we appreciate you.
Thank you very much. Thank you for having me.
Sidebar with Cindy.
Every Monday to Thursday, 7 to 8 p.m. on Kaya FM 95.9.
Rewinding Kaya FM on FM Rewind. Visit kayafm.co.za for more.